Welcome to the Platform Podcast, where we talk to coaches, athletes, experts, and real people to learn about their approaches to training, nutrition, mindset, and much more. I'm your host, Jordan Kundi Wright, founder and head coach of the Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, and our mission is to become our best selves through sport. This episode is brought to you by the American Kettlebell Lifters Union. We're 501c3 whose mission is to provide a voice for lifters across the U.S. For the lifters, by the lifters. If you haven't signed up yet, click the link in the episode notes for 25% off an annual membership. Your membership supports uniform costs for athletes representing the USA at the WKSF World Championships and the growth of our sport across the country. You'll receive member benefits like discounts on many brands through Expert Voice, discounts on event registrations, coaching, and more to come. Now, in this episode, I welcome in Jen Brockstrom, who is a registered dietitian and founder of Prosper Nutrition Coaching, a world-class nutrition certification for gym owners and coaches. She's also an award-winning Foods and Nutrition University professor. She writes for Precision Nutrition, and she owns her own private practice, Nutrition RX. And we dive in on her background as an athlete before nerding out on some nutrition coaching, the importance of mindset, habit formation, and how you can apply Jen's high ROI habits in your life. I think you'll find this episode both entertaining and educational. But first, I want to tell you I'm incredibly grateful that you listen to this podcast. And of course, the best way you could support me is to go ahead and give us a like, a subscribe, a follow, and leave us a 5-star rating and review on your app of choice. And share our work with your friends, your family, your fellow lifters, so that we can help spread the word. And please support our sponsors, whose links you'll find in the episode notes. And of course, if you want help reaching your goals without wasting time, please fill out the coaching interest form linked in the show notes. I help athletes of all levels using my integrated coaching approach. You can follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Twin Cities Kettlebell Club, or email me at twincitieskettlebellclub@gmail.com. Now, without further ado, let's step onto the platform with Jen Brockstrom. All right, welcome into this week's episode of the Platform Podcast. My guest today is Jen Brockstrom. She is a registered dietitian from Kanuckistan, as Matt Boris would say, our mutual friend. She's from Canada. Jen, thank you so much for coming on to the Platform Podcast.
Oh my gosh, I am pumped to be here. And we were just chatting about our very similar backgrounds of where we both come from. So I am excited to dive in.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your background. I always like to start with the origin story. So, I mean, we can go back as far as you want. I mean, maybe start after conception, but, you know, we can go back as far as you want. Like, how did you grow up and, you know, what's your background?
Yeah. So I am a Canadian registered dietitian and sports nutritionist. I was that kid who was like a really hard worker, but a generalist when it came to sports. So I played ice hockey, dance, basketball, baseball, volleyball, cross country, track. Like, I was kind of the kid that did it all. I wouldn't say I was overly naturally talented, but I worked really hard. So as I, you know, worked really hard, both in school and in sports, it started to lead me into this path of, I knew I liked science. I knew I liked helping people. I knew I liked fitness and wellness. And so as I was checking out career options, this whole idea of being a registered dietitian and specifically working with athletes and sports nutrition really caught my eye. And so I started off at a sports medicine clinic when I was a high school student, you know, volunteering and doing a little bit of admin work. And then I ended up going to Queen's University and getting my degree in life sciences and business. And then I did a second degree in food and nutritional science. Then I went and got my master's in food and nutrition. I did some cancer research for a while, but ultimately jumped right into building my own private practice, Nutrition RX. And I've got to work with Olympic athletes and NHL hockey players. And that also accidentally led me into being a foods and nutrition professor at Western University, where I teach first year nutrition and an advanced sports nutrition course. So I hope I'm qualified to talk to you about sports nutrition today.
I think maybe slightly. For those of us on the American side of the border, where is Queens University, and then where is Western University, and where do you live actually?
you got to remember
we don't pay attention to anything outside of our own borders, so like we don't
totally. You guys are all in your bubble. Yeah. So Queens University is in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. It's really known for its medical sciences and business programs. So it's definitely one of the top Canadian university schools. And then Western is also in London, Ontario, Canada. So I had to switch cities by about 5-6 hours. And it has one of the top nutrition programs in terms of Canadian training academics. But I'm a little biased because I also switched to go to that school. I should mention I was a dual varsity athlete. So I played both varsity hockey and varsity rowing when I was in my university years. The Canadian Olympic Training Center for rowing was based in the city that Western University is. So I got to row alongside Olympic level athletes and almost chose that path, but I ultimately picked my career over being a broke professional athlete. But it might have swayed my decision a little bit where I continued to do my education, because you want to be the minnow with sharks. You don't want to be the big fish in the little pond.
You were try hard though, like that you're not that great of an athlete, and yet you were like kind of on the cusp of being a pro at something. So we'll call bullshit a little bit.
Okay, probably, I guess. And then I guess I'll add to my resume. I competed in CrossFit at a really high level. So for any of you CrossFit listeners, I went to regionals 4 times as an individual, you know, before sort of retiring in my 30s from that super high level beat down. And that was so much fun to train at CrossFit and to, you know, take it as high as I could.
Nice. Okay. Well, so now I'm going to nerd out a little bit because, you know, I'm in Minnesota and my daughter is coming up as a hockey player. So she's nine, loves playing, working on her edge work and, you know, all that good stuff. So what position did you play in hockey, or what positions, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
And what did you
I usually
did you love
played
to play?
Right wing or center. Those are my two favorite positions.
Nice. Okay. And then in the boat, how big was the crew that you were on and what position were you in?
Okay, I love that question. I am very versatile. So I rowed in the 8, which is like, you know, the big boat want to try and make. But I also taught myself how to scull. So I got to race the single at Canadians and be like the fastest single rower for our crew. And you race that really skinny little one-person boat. I've raced pairs, I've raced doubles. I taught myself in rowing, you can scull, which is you have 2 oars in each hand, or you can sweep, which is where you have 1 oar. And I'm a little bit weird. I learned how to be ambidextrous in rowing. So I can row starboard, I can row port. I have really good rhythm. So I've stroked our boat, which is like the person who sets the rhythm. And we won Head of the Charles, which is one of the biggest rowing regattas in the United States in Boston. I also got to sit, head of the boat and bow. And that's where you have to be light and technical and strong. And you're really in charge of a lot of the boat steering because you have to hit your power at the right time. So I just figured out how to make myself really valuable. And the coaches love me because they could sort of slot me into any place in the crew. And yeah, I can kind of do it all. I can row on both sides. I can row with 1 or 2 big boats, little boats. So that was a true, really fun experience.
Were you ever the coxswain?
No. Okay. So the coxies are like the littlest people. I wasn't short enough to be a coxswain.
Well, all I could see is your shoulders up. So I don't know how tall you are. So I would assume
solid 5'6", nice average in the middle.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Rowing fascinates me because it is literally one of the only sports I can think of where the start of the race is where you go out as hard as you can. Mm-hmm. And so like it immediately puts you over threshold and then you just have to hold on. Like then it's
you
like,
just
then it's
like lactic acid
how long can you suffer with just your entire body burning, right? Like it's kind of an
odd sport if you think about it, because you're like, get on water, set your lactic acid nervous system on fire, and then just sit there for like 6 to 9 minutes in utter pain as the world is just kind of going by in the water. But there's this magic that happens when you're with a crew where when everyone's in sync it's like one body working together. It's almost like an octopus where you have all these different arms and tentacles that have to work in cohesion. And when you hit that run on the boat and the water just starts flowing underneath, and that, like, it's like a perfect heavy clean. When you just connect in the right way, for anyone that's done a lot of weightlifting, you know, when you've just nailed your lift, how good that bar feels. There's sort of that feeling in rowing too. When everyone is connecting with the water together, the boat just moves so fast and it's so much fun, even though it painfully, painfully hurts the entire time that you're racing.
Yeah. Like the only way I've ever equated it to any, and I've never been a rower. Like I will never, you know, you don't want somebody my size in the boat. Trust me. It's bad. It's bad for physics. But like I've equated it to, like, imagine somebody told you, I want you to run the fastest mile you can, but you have to sprint the first 400 meters and then yes. you can slow down. And it's right. like that is just that to me is just, that's just such a unique sport. But I love the feel, like that flow state, right? That flow mm-hmm. state is super, super cool when you get it on it as an individual. So I imagine when you're sculling, like that's a super, like, kind of meditative, kind of peaceful place to get to. But getting yeah. a whole crew of people to that flow state together, I can only imagine that feels just, like you said, pretty, pretty incredible when you get everybody kind of synced up like that. That sounds really, really cool. How did you get into rowing?
So I was playing varsity hockey, and our coach, I mean, I don't ever play the victim mentality, but when you're dealing with a raging alcoholic, it doesn't really make your sport that much fun. So this guy would be drunk at practice. He would throw pucks at us. He would creepily walk into the dressing room with a team of young women changing, like just some really inappropriate stuff. And I was starting to get to my breaking point of, unfortunately, falling out of love with the sport I did love so much because of this one kind of rotten bad apple. And so one of the things I just decided to do in the summer is I really believe in playing a wide variety of sports and not overly specializing. I think that was part of my skill set, is I just regularly tried new things, picked up new skills, was really open-minded to learning from different sports. And so in the summer, instead of playing ice hockey indoors in the summertime, I was like, why don't I learn a new sport this summer? And I signed up for a recreational learn to row program, and then, you know, used the rowing machine on land for some additional cardiovascular fitness, but was like, maybe I can learn some cool balance and body awareness kinesthetic drills just by going out in the water. And I started to really pick it up rather quickly. And then our university had this like novice rowing program where you got to be a beginner, but sort of row alongside the varsity crew. And then I trained with them all winter long and got good enough and fast enough that I was, you know, made the team the following year. And that was just, it's a sport that really rewards hard work. So you can get good very quickly as long as you work super hard. Yeah. And that was incredibly gratifying. So I decided to just sort of go all in, and I switched from varsity hockey to varsity rowing. And I'm so glad I did, because I had excellent coaches. It taught me so much about discipline, you know, waking up at 4:30 in the morning, showing up to practice, going to bed on time. Nutrition was so big for rowing performance, because how much you weigh in the boat and the drag really impacts your speed on the water. So you had to be light and lean and powerful. And it was just so fun to pick up all these new skills.
So you're like, okay, this is a nice, fun, casual hobby. Why don't I just let it consume my entire soul? Yeah. I'm just really gonna
obsess on
this. I kind
of get a little intense and go all in with stuff.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never done that at all. Well, that's fantastic. That's such a cool trend. I don't know very many people that have been rowers, especially at a high level. So that's such a cool, unique sport. What sport of you've done a variety of sports, and you talked about the idea of being a well-rounded sport. So, you know, asking for a friend, if you had a 9-year-old daughter who was, you know, talking about specializing in a sport, what would you say the best sport is that translates to most generally to developing your all-around athleticism of the sports that you've played?
Don't make me pick. It's so hard to pick, but
I'm not asking you to pick which one's your favorite. I'm asking you which one you think generalizes the best for general athletic capability.
I would probably have to say gymnastics, because it just forces you to have that body awareness. There is so much strength, there's so much flexibility, there's so much speed, there's power. And I mean, when I started to compete at CrossFit at the highest level, Absolutely. The athletes that had gymnastics in their younger childhood years, they instantly popped into that top kind of 10% because of the amount of strength and body control they already had. Their tendons were so strong, their joints were so stable because they had just done all the prep work over the years. And I mean, even for them, they hadn't maybe like lifted heavy, but the power of gymnastics translated so well, ultimately.
That relative strength builds such a good foundation because it's all controlling your own body weight first. And like everybody should be able to safely control their own body weight before they move to heavy maximal loads or even sub maximal loads over time. Right. So I can see that.
Yeah.
That
I think gymnastics has to get my vote for that.
That's where my brain usually goes actually is gymnastics in general. I have separate issues with gymnastics from a body image perspective and the pressure, the pressure that especially women get to be a certain size and certain type of build, but you know, that's a different podcast topic.
So, yeah.
Well, I want to pivot a little bit now. So now that we know a little bit about you and you're you know, you know a little bit about a little bit, you know, so we've got you appropriately credentialed. I want to dive in a little bit on sports specific nutrition because I think one of the misconceptions that people have when it comes to nutrition is that just good fundamental nutrition is the same for everybody. And it's I mean I'm going to say my opinion is that sports specific nutrition is actually of course there are fundamentals, but like I think sports specific nutrition is actually a different application of similar frameworks. So
you're correct. Yeah.
Let's dive in on that. Like, what do you think, if you were going to explain the differences between what you do when you're working as a dietitian and you're working with someone who says, I want to lose 60 pounds as opposed to you're working with an NHL athlete who comes to you and says, hey, I need help getting my diet dialed in. Right. Like, how does that play out for you when you're dealing with those two types of clients?
Yeah. So the very first mental image I'm going to paint for you and the listeners is the idea of a ladder. So if you picture a ladder, there's all these individual rungs that as you start to climb rung by rung by rung, you get higher up the ladder. And so the very first thing I think that a lot of even professional coaches miss when it comes to nutrition is the skill of assessment and awareness. So not only for me as the coach, am I assessing and am I aware of what skills have they already demonstrated mastery over, showing the rungs that they've already climbed on their own and what rungs are they working on or they're working towards, but the athlete themselves has to have a good assessment and awareness. So it's not necessarily that the NHL hockey player, and I'll tell you some real life stories, like happy to nerd out on real case studies with you guys. But I'll give you an example. One of the NHL hockey players I was working with, I had to kind of treat like a young teenage boy, even though he's like 22, 23, being paid $2-3 million a year, because this guy doesn't even know how to like cook chicken breast in his oven or how to steam broccoli or like the basics. And so when I'm working with a pro athlete that's like living off of fast food and Uber Eats, I have to assess where is this guy at? Because if I start to throw high level sports nutrition and he doesn't have any skill beyond like, I know how to make a bowl of cereal, does that count as a meal? That's okay. No judgment. Where in reality are they at? And then I have to find that rung and start to help them develop the skills rung by rung by rung to get them to as high of a level as they feel capable and motivated and able to sustain. And that's no different than I work with someone who maybe has 60 pounds to lose. I'm looking for the knowledge gaps, the skill gaps, the perceived obstacle gaps. And I'm trying to give them mindset skills. I'm trying to give them a supportive environment and then layering in those daily and weekly healthy habits that they can rep out, you know, rep after rep, repetition after repetition, so that they have a solid base to build higher skills off of. And I always use the metaphor. We don't go to the paint store. We don't go pick out wallpaper until the house foundation has been built. So whether I work with a pro athlete or a regular everyday folk, I don't start applying wallpaper and paint colors until I make sure we have a solid base. Nice. So that's one commonality I think between both groups is the base has to be there first.
What are the bricks that you're looking for? Yeah, we're looking at the foundation. One.
So the main foundation, I have kind of like a list of seven, but I'll just try to shorten it even further, is mostly whole foods, between 70 to 85% of the time. Now, when I work with more elite athletes, I bump that percent up to more like 90%. Regular people might be more like 70, 80%, but that whole 80-20 rule is a good generality. The next thing we look at is making sure that the food environment is set up for success. So if I were to do a pop quiz and open your refrigerator, would I see vegetables cut up? Would I see some healthy food options in there that you could whip up a dinner tonight if I were to come over? Do you have some pretty nutritious snacks in your freezer, your fridge, your pantry? So we do a lot on building supportive environments. And the phrase I use is make the healthy choice the easy choice. Because humans are lazy, they get tired, they get overwhelmed, and they're stressed. So if their environment doesn't have a safety net, they will default to the lowest common denominator food choice, which is usually junk food. So environment is really important. Another thing is just appetite awareness and being able to recognize genuine hunger, not boredom hunger, mouth hunger, brain hunger, but like my stomach is hungry, it needs food, and the ability to stop when satisfied, but not stuffed. So this starts to get into the realm of emotional and stress eating, portion control and awareness. And then in terms of the hydration side of things, of course, making water our main beverage, you know, water, coffee, tea, and not drinking sugar sweetened beverages or lots of alcohol. And then this one might be a little bit controversial, but I started to introduce it into my coaching and it made a huge difference in the house foundation. And it is the mindset piece. So the mindset piece is to be curious and kind and honest, but resilient and always looking for solutions that are realistic. So notice how I'm getting rid of the idea of perfectionism, all or nothing thinking. And I think part of the foundational bricks is this idea of like, I'm going to show up every day. I'm going to be as consistent as I can. I'm going to give my best for that day. But I'm going to give myself grace that my best might go up or down based on life circumstances. But I'm not going to wait for the perfect time. I'm not going to start on Monday. I'm not going to wait till after the holidays. It's this idea of I'm going to be consistent and to the best of my ability day in and day out. And I think that's a really important foundational mindset a lot of people miss when it comes to their nutrition.
Kettlebell Drenga, thank you for joining the battle for the North American Championship. You fought bravely and earned your glory. Thank you again to all of our sponsors. Living Fit sponsored the purse. Barefoot Athletics provided 6 gift cards worth $100 each. Pro Kettlebell provided 2 kettlebells and 1 pair each of 1 kilogram and 2 kilogram level up magnetic chips. Kettlebell Kings gave a $150 gift card. CK Maceworks provided 2 plate loadable maces or Indian clubs. Morpheus Training did 3 M7 heart rate monitors. Sorensen Strong, 1 pair of 1.5 pound Indian clubs engraved with the WKSF North American Championship logo. And Viking Performance provided the chalk that we used at the competition. I hope you will join us again next year. Please stay tuned for announcements and updates for next year's event. Thank you again for competing bravery. May your name forever live out in the Hall of Champions.
I agree, and I can see why Matt told me that I should have you on the podcast, because there's one of the episodes that I've done that's called "If It's Not Perfect, It's Shit," because that's a thing that I hear. I get that from clients a lot, where it's like, well, you know, I already did I can't do the perfect thing, so I may as well. You get the fuck it's, you get the, you know, the
yeah.
Thing people are like, oh well, I already went off the rails, so may as well just eat the whole pizza, or I may as well finish the bottle of bourbon, or I may right whatever.
For sure.
You get all of those things. And I love that, like, mindset is such a huge piece of getting away from those binary black or white,
yeah.
Like all or nothing thinking is such a problem.
Yeah.
And especially, it's one of those things, I think, especially people that have that achievement based personality, mm-hmm. You either check the box or you didn't, you either won
yeah.
the race or you didn't. Right. And it's like, no, we have to give ourselves spectrum thinking and
yep.
that ability to understand that it doesn't have to be perfect. It progress is progress.
Well, my secret love language is metaphors. And can I actually share a metaphor with you and your listeners on how to break that all or nothing mindset? Because it is one of the most toxic mindsets when it comes to changing our nutrition habits. So the game I play with my clients, athletes included, is I call it the health spending account or the health piggy bank. I want you to think about a bank account for a second. As you get paid, money's going to go from your employer into your bank account. And then there's going to be some life expenses that money is going to flow out of your bank account, right? Groceries, rent, insurance, internet, phone bills, stuff like that. Now, imagine you were saving for, say, a vacation, a car, a down payment on a house. And all of a sudden, you have an unexpected expense that's a little bit more than what you're used to budgeting for. Maybe there was a leak and you have to pay to replace carpet or something like that. Now, you wouldn't be like, ah, well, screw it. I've been saving all this money for the down payment of a house. This carpet's going to cost me $5,000 to fix. Might as well blow the $40,000 that I've been saving, because what's the point? You know, this unexpected expense came up. That would be such a ridiculous thing to do with your money. You'd be like, oh, maybe I got to cut back this next month and, you know, save up on expenses a little bit because that cost me a bit more. But you wouldn't burn everything down to the ground. And so if you think about wealth, people that get wealthy over time have one cool habit in common. They live within their means, meaning they contribute money faster than they spend it. And if they contribute faster than they burn it, their wealth will grow. So when I think about a health piggy bank, I think about contributions to my health and I think about deductions to my health. If I eat a large serving of veggies with my lunch, there's an awesome contribution. If I have protein each and every meal and snack in my day, awesome contribution. If I'm drinking water all day long, contribution. If I get to bed on time, contribution. If I go to the gym, contribution. If I stay up late scrolling, you know, on Instagram, oop, little bit of a deduction. If I go out drinking and have three alcoholic beverages and I'm a little hungover tomorrow, little bit of a deduction. If I go to Starbucks and get a drive-through, I don't know, chocolate chip cookie, little bit of a deduction. But instead of being bad, I'm not bad. The deduction's not bad. I just have to keep tabs on my expenses. And so if I can contribute healthy choices faster than I'm deducting, my health is always actually on the incline and getting better. And so that piggy bank analogy is like, just keep adding, but sometimes you can only add a quarter or a dollar or a $20 bill. And if you're going to deduct, just make the deduction as small as you can. So if you have to take 20 bucks out of your bank account, that's okay. Don't make it 200. Don't make it 2000. So keep the bleed small when you make a deduction and then just move on and forgive yourself. Like, no big deal. Is that helpful to kind of think of it like a bank account?
Yeah, I love that analogy, and I use some similar, but this one's more for like the behaviors, right? It's like, oh, yeah. Remember that time that you went to work and you made a mistake and your boss told you needed to fix something, then you quit, right? You're like, yeah, I'm done. I can't do this. Right.
My career.
You just walked out. And they're like, no, of course not. I was like, oh, okay. So then why would you do that when you're like, oh, I was over on my calories for Tuesday.
Right.
Right. It's like, oh, okay.
So burn it all down.
Maybe don't burn the whole week because you were over for one.
The other great story I like to tell is I call it the metaphor of the carpenter. So Monday to Friday, the carpenter diligently is building their dream house and the house makes progress each and every day. And then on Friday, they just douse it in gasoline, throw a match at it, and they watch the house burn. And all night Friday and Saturday and Sunday, the house is just engulfed in flames. And then they come back to the job site on Monday, and now they have to like start again with this charred base. So many people do that with their food. Yeah, they try to eat perfectly Monday to Friday, and then they have like cheap meals or disastrous weekends, and they burn it all down. And then they're like, well, Monday I'll start again. Or we could just stop lighting our houses on fire and be more patient with a consistent effort than a perfect breakneck speed to then go light it all on fire and start all over again.
I love that analogy too, because it's like, all I'm asking you to do, you don't have to build over the weekend. I'm not saying you have to work on the weekend. I'm saying maintenance is fine over
don't
the weekend.
Don't burn it
just
down.
Don't burn it down, right? And it's like, you can open the aperture on that and be like, that means we could get the house, we could work on it for 6 months and then just decide we don't have enough money right now. We're going to leave it as it is, but we're not going to burn anything down. We're not like, right?
Exactly.
It's like, it's okay to have periods of maintenance where you're not making progress, but so long as you're not actively detracting from what you've already built, you can get where you want to go.
100%.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Now I'm gonna ask a follow up question on your banking analogy. Actually, that made me think. How do you handle because people that are aware of their net worth track their net worth. Mm-hmm. They have a budget. They track their spending. They track their ins and outs. Yeah. Right. So, how do you approach tracking macros or mindfulness, or what are your different approaches that you take with different people so that they can be aware of whether or not they're adding or detracting from their budget?
Such an intelligent question. And the best clients are the ones who track, but maybe not in the way that you think. And I'll elaborate on my answer there. So what I use this meme, which is like, you know, what society thinks I do, what my mom thinks I do, what I think I do, what clients think I should do. And in the world of nutrition coaching, the expectation is my coach is going to assign me how many calories to eat. They're going to give me a meal plan. They're going to give me my macro splits. And if I go back to my ladder and my rung analogy, this is a higher level skill. You have to demonstrate portion awareness and cooking ability and, you know, environment design and appetite regulation. So when I often start someone with tracking and they're a little more basic, what I actually do is we pick the behaviors that drive the outcome that we want. So say weight loss is the goal, that's the outcome. I have to think about what actions are high ROI, high return on investment behaviors. And then what I do is I actually have, and I'll hold it up because we're on camera. If this ever gets to YouTube, there'll be a nice visual that goes along with it, but I will absolutely use my words for anyone that is listening along. And I think a picture goes a long way to demonstrate what I'm going to talk about. So when I work with clients, I have a healthy habit sort of nutrition guide that we work through. We go off this iceberg of success, which is based on willpower at the very tip of the iceberg. Knowledge is the next layer, that little bit bigger. But the deepest three layers that drive our behavior is our everyday habits, followed by a supportive environment, and our mindset and our self-talk. And so as I work with clients and we emphasize this iceberg, on the back of their book, they get this really simple habit tracker. And so what the habit tracker starts to become is if we have an outcome goal, which is say weight loss or improved athletic performance or more strength or speed or whatever the case might be, we need to break down that goal into what daily behaviors, if done consistently, are going to drive the outcome that you want. So this is a thing that I'm holding up, and I'll use my words, of someone that was working with me for weight loss. Oh my God, you're holding up your iceberg too. I love it.
I have great minds think alike. Pyramid of success. Yeah.
There we go. So in this particular habit tracker, someone that is, you know, 60 pounds, 70 pounds overweight, but they're not demonstrating that they're super high up on the ice on the ladder.
I'm also holding up a daily actions tracker here.
We are so in sync. I love this. So like for this particular client, what it turned out to be is that their daily actions were to try to have vegetables 2 times a day, roughly about the size of their outstretched hand. If we could aim for 50% of their plate being veggies at lunch and dinner, rock star high ROI behavior. And then we did an environment goal. We do something called the veggie bucket, which is where they chop up all their vegetables once a week, and then their vegetables go front and center in their refrigerator. So they're so easy to add to salads or stir fries or eat raw. So each weekend that they made a veggie bucket, they just had to write down the letters VB for veggie bucket. And then every time they had a serving of veggies, they just had to put a check mark into their tracker for like, I did that behavior. And then they were really into, they were drinking a lot of soda. They always had something caffeinated and full of sugar every afternoon. So we identified another high return on investment habit as each time they could add water in their afternoon, we would give them a point. And so like the piggy bank, all they had to do in their scoreboard was show every single time they made an addition into their health account. And so they started to get all this reinforcement of like, I'm winning, I'm doing it, I'm being consistent. Gamifying it. That's the key word. And can I like really, really nerd out if I go into like professor nutrition mode with you?
Please do.
Okay. So there's a layer of nerdiness I don't always explain to the clients, but I love to debrief it on podcasts. And so the psychology of behavior change is driven by two types of goals. There is a style of goal setting called approach goal setting, and there's a style of goal setting called avoid goal setting. Approach goal setting has more success than avoid, and I'll give some specifics. Approach goals are things that you say yes to. So if you think about someone walking and standing in place, approach is like you take a step forward towards it. So in this example that I'm holding up, this person set all approach goals. They said yes to adding vegetables to their plate. They said yes to cutting up vegetables and adding them to their food environment. They said yes to adding water as something they drink in the afternoon. Notice what I kept off their goals. There was nothing we tracked or slapped them on the wrist that they did if it was bad. So we didn't punish them if they drank their Coke. We didn't punish them if they had a glass of alcohol. We didn't punish them if they got takeout. So when people often set nutrition goals, especially the US is very avoid-based in its nutrition messaging. It's go, don't have sugar. Carbs are bad. Go keto and cut this.
Here's the five things to avoid if you don't want to die young.
I want to talk about mental endurance for a second. So I'll use you, John. You can be my my example of like, how do you feel about this? If I said, I want you to take out all white carbs and all refined sugars, could you do that for the rest of the day today?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you could. Do you think you could give me 3 days, no sugar, no refined carbs?
Yes.
You could do it. Perfect. Could you do 3 weeks of that?
Yes.
Could you do 3 months of that?
Yes.
Not one day where you break it.
Yes.
Could you do 3 years of that?
Fuck off.
Could you do 3 decades of that?
No. Hell no.
No. Exactly. So at a certain point, you'll see the endurance finish line where people are like, oh, I don't want to do that.
I know. The reason I can answer that is I know that my cap is like 3 months. Like there you go. I can do 90 days of just about anything.
Right.
But beyond that,
you're done. You're tapping out.
Yeah.
But if I said, hey, do you think I could get you to have vegetables about twice a day for the rest, like for the rest of the weekend?
Yes.
Probably do it.
Yeah.
Do you think you could do it for 3 weeks? Yep. Veggies twice a day? 3 months? Okay, what about 3 years at 80%?
Yeah.
So not perfect, but like that 80% consistency, you're thinking about like veggies twice a day.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. 3 decades?
Yeah.
You can still do it. Yeah. So the moment you set goals around things you're going to say yes to and move towards, you do more of it. And then when you talk about things you have to avoid or limit, it creates binging and all or nothing, and you get much more extreme behaviors on the spectrum of behavior change. And the most fascinating example, if we're going to get real nerdy here on this podcast, is I'm going to bring in a anti-drug campaign of Iceland versus the United States. So drugs are bad. Drugs are a problem in many parts of the world. They, you know, obviously ruin lives and can create a lot of havoc. And what was so interesting is when the U.S. especially increase their messaging on drugs are bad, don't do drugs, what happened? Drug use actually increased. It brought more awareness to a air quote bad thing. So Iceland is a really interesting example. At one period of time, they had one of the higher drug and drinking and teen pregnancy rates in all of Europe. And they wanted to really help their society be healthier and have less, you know, behavioral issues. So they hired a team of researchers to help them figure out what they should do. And they're like, we have X amount of dollars. What should we put this budget towards? Should we do anti-drug messaging? Should we get in the schools and educate the students on how bad it is? And they said, no, don't talk about the behavior you don't want. Talk about the behavior you do want. So they put that money to after-school programs, and they subsidize hobbies, arts, drama, crafts, sports. If you could basically find a community with like-minded individuals where you could belong and do something productive with your time after school. And then they did investment in parenting classes for how to have better conversations with teens, how to sit down and have family meals and be really connected. And basically, they talked about all the behaviors they wanted, which was connected parents with their teens and engaged teenagers with like-minded teens in positive hobbies and sports and clubs. And they didn't at all do messaging about drinking, drugs, sex, anything. What happened? They increased the behaviors they desired. And naturally, it's called positive displacement.
Yep.
The good stuff positively displaced the behaviors they didn't want. It's so straightforward. I don't know why more nutrition coaches don't talk about food like that. But what do? We talk about all the things people have to avoid or stop doing. And it sets people up to fail.
Well, I think part of it is, you know, if you look at your pyramid, right, or you look at your iceberg, right, my pyramid, yeah, your iceberg, right, I think the layer that's missing from a lot of people's pyramid is you start with the mindset,
yep, right?
Like you said, you start there, and if you don't understand how the mind works, you're right, not going to understand how to shape people's behavior, right? You have to understand
100%.
You have to understand how to start with mindset. And then I think the thing that I love that I don't incorporate enough into my own framework actually is environment management, because mm-hmm, that is the avoidance stuff that you're talking about, that we don't want, right, to set avoidance goals, because
right,
that will only lead to binging and things like that. But you want to set up your environment so that you don't have triggers, right? So it's the 100%. if you want to build a habit, make it easy. If you want to avoid a bad habit, make it hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Increase the friction by making the environment set up for success by giving you, yep, the things that you want to do easy access, and the things you don't want to do hard access, right? If you're trying to quit drinking, get the alcohol out of the house or lock it up or whatever, mm-hmm, right? Make it hard to get to. If you are binging at night on ice cream, get the ice cream out of the house. Or if you can't get it out of the house, then put it in the deep freeze downstairs and put a lock on the deep freeze, right? Like there's, yeah, all sorts of things that you can do. And those avoidance tactics are not avoidance goals. You just set your environment up for success so that you can focus on doing the things that you want to do. And the avoidance just becomes a product of your environment.
Yeah. And you know what? Let's play a game on that, because as you know, I love games and I love offering little mindset tricks for the listener, so that way they can really take something out of our podcast today. So you're going to be my guinea pig once again.
Okay.
I call this the toothbrush game. So I'm going to put you on the spot. Did you brush your teeth last night?
I did.
Good. I did too. Now I'm going to out myself, and maybe I'm going to out you. Has there been a night in the last 365 days where you were just exhausted and you flopped into bed and you meant to brush your teeth, and for some reason you just didn't before you went to bed?
Absolutely.
Have you done that?
Yes, definitely have.
I have too. Like, I try not to do that often, but I'm a mere mortal. Now, see, today's a Friday that we're recording this. What would you do tomorrow, Saturday, if for some reason tonight you didn't brush your teeth? Walk me through your mindset of how you would problem solve that.
Honestly, I would wake up and be like, my mouth feels gross, and the first, yeah, thing I would do is brush my teeth.
Notice how you don't call yourself names. You don't wait till Monday. You don't go, ah, screw it, I've already blown it, so I might as well get my teeth real fuzzy this weekend, because if they're bad, I'm going to be real bad. Notice how you just don't skip a beat. And as soon as possible, you course correct and you just go make it right. But there is something really cool and invisible that impacts your ability to brush your teeth consistently. So we're talking about the habit of brushing our teeth. Notice how it's simple, it's short, it's 5 minutes or faster. Most people can do it. But here's the thing that props up the habit of brushing our teeth. Our environment is like invisible train tracks directing our behavior. So I'm going to wage $1 million bet, and I bet I'm going to win my money. If I was a toothbrush robber, weird career, I don't go around stealing people's toothbrushes, but if I broke into your house, I would beeline for your master bathroom. And your toothbrush is probably in a cup right beside the sink, or it's in a medicine cabinet right there. It is not in your mudroom. It's not in your basement. It's not in a hockey bag in your daughter's, you know, bag where she plays. It's not in a kitchen cupboard. It is right where you need it to be. Am I winning my $1 million?
Yeah, so I have to, you would have a tough time winning this bet with me, because this is such, so funny that you picked this habit specifically, because sometimes I sleep downstairs because my wife works nights at the hospital as a nurse. So sometimes I sleep in the downstairs room. I have a toothbrush downstairs. I have a toothbrush upstairs. I have a toothbrush, yep, in my rucksack, and I have a toothbrush in my suitcase. So in case I travel for work, I never forget my toothbrush.
That is so incredible is you've thought about all the environments you might be in on a regular basis. And you didn't just set yourself up for the one scenario where you sleep in the master bedroom and you use the master bathroom. You're like, well, it could be this scenario or this scenario or this scenario. And you've actually pre-thought about your success because you've made multiple environments support you.
Well, it's, let's not give me that example. Much credit. We'll say that I have observed incidents of failure and said, what can I do to reconcile those incidents of failure? I can,
yeah,
go spend $5 on another toothbrush and just have one upstairs, one downstairs, right? Like
there you go.
I just got multiple toothbrushes, but it was predicated on failure of success in the habit, but that's okay.
But here's the thing, you're demonstrating a champion mindset. What a champion mindset is it goes, what's the solution to the real life obstacles I'm facing? So I give it a name. I learned this in business school. There is the BDO, the best doable option, or there is the BTO, the best theoretical option. The best theoretical option isn't actually an option because it is just high-level theory based on a perfect scenario of perfect people, of perfect conditions at all times. That is not a world most of us live in. We live in doable, you know, a doable, somewhat realistic world. So the best doable option is like, what is the option? You know, if I'm, I don't know, like really crazy, but say you're out in the woods and you've lost your toothbrush and you have to like brush your teeth with a stick or your finger, that maybe is the best doable option in that scenario. So the best problem solvers are the ones who don't wait for conditions to be perfect. They just find solutions that meet the weirdness of their real life. So in your case, you need a toothbrush in your rucksack and the spare bedroom and these other locations, and you're just doing the best doable option.
I might be a little obsessive too, that there's that thing, but you know, that's great. Well, we set up to do a podcast on sports nutrition, and we ended up doing it more around habit formation and some, you know, the fundamentals of behavior change, which I absolutely freaking love. So, I'll ask you one more question. I'll ask you two more questions. You've already alluded to coming back, so I would actually love to bring you back to do more on sports nutrition. We talked about maybe doing something on women's health as well, or women's hormones. Maybe we can make that a split episode. But cool. Since we focused more on kind of the basic habits, let's leave the listeners with like three action items. If you could pick, like, what are your three favorite like low-hanging fruits or best longest levers that people can pull if they wanted to get started now, not wait until New Year's to make changes, right? Like, we're gonna start now, right? Okay. What would be three habits that you would recommend for anybody, or three behaviors, anything that you would recommend for anybody that wants to start making positive progress towards their goals?
Okay. There's so many good ones, but if I have to limit it to three,
you can go five. I won't limit you actually. You go.
Okay. So number one, I would say vegetables at least twice a day, if not three times, but two is a really good starting point. Always have them cut up, ready to go in your fridge. Make the healthy choice, the easy choice. What's great about veggies, especially if you can hit 50% of your plate covered in vegetables, is you get so much fiber, so many colorful phytonutrients, and you get that positive displacement. So that's going to be high return on investment habit one. High return on investment habit two, protein. Protein every single time you eat, every meal, every snack, something that's really high in protein. Don't get all weird and anal, like, does peanut butter count versus cheese versus that? Just gravitate to whole foods that are based in protein. Eat protein every single time you're eating food. Your digestive system is going to be well satiated. It's amazing for building muscle. It is a nutrient that takes so many calories to break down protein. So you're just going to be this little furnace burning protein as you eat it, but protein each and every time that you have food. The third thing I'm going to do is actually a mindset hack, which is do the best you can where you are with what you have. So this is my phrase I use to just like do the best doable option at all times. Let go of rigid perfectionism. It is the perfectionism that makes people start and stop and start and stop. The people who never stop are the people who get better results. It's the turtle versus the hare.
Quitting.
So you just have to go at it every meal, every snack. What is the best I can do? The best quality fuel I have available to me in this moment. And then take it moment by moment. There is no start to a diet. There's no end to a diet because you're not dieting. You're just a healthy person. So it's a really important mindset shift. And then if I am going to go past three, I'm going to probably now go into that environment layer, which is you have to make the healthy choices, the easiest choices. Your environment is like your train tracks. If you put work into building those guardrails, they save you from plowing into the wall. So like, for example, if you came into my house and you pulled open my freezer drawer, there's going to be between 5 to 15 individually frozen healthy meals. On nights that I make a nutritious dinner and I keep glassware around, so I just take some extra portions of the meal I made and I have a section of my freezer that's just lunches and dinners for times I don't feel like cooking or don't have enough groceries. If you open my fridge, you'll see vegetables cut up. You'll see bowls of fruit that are washed. You'll see those little things that just allow me to grab and go. And so I always kind of joke that Jen of the past sets Jen of the future up for success. So I have what I call like sporadic willpower. I have little spurts of willpower where I concentrate my effort to set myself up for success. And then regular Jen is a mere mortal like the rest of us. I get tired, I get lazy, I get busy, I get overwhelmed. But sporadic Jen with willpower uses that energy and then sets up my environment. And I think the reason I'm so consistent and healthy is because of my environment. It is always my safety net. So I think that's four things, but that would probably be where I'd start. Yeah. Vegetables, protein, always do the best you can, but get rid of perfectionism, and your environment is your guardrails that keeps you on track.
Nice. Those are Jen's four high ROI habits that you can take in action tomorrow, today, for free. Right. Those are all things that don't cost you any money that you're not already spending. You got to buy food anyway. So buy healthy options. I love it. This is great. Well, Jen, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been such a fun conversation. My face hurts from smiling. You're a big smiler too, which I love. So this is a lot of fun. I would love to have you back so we can nerd out more on some sports nutrition and maybe some hormone specific stuff for women as well. So I would love to have you back. So thank you so much. And we will see you soon back on the Platform Podcast.
That sounds awesome. And are you okay if I leave some freebie resources for some of your listeners? Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, I completely messed up. So tell us how people can get at you, how they can follow you, get more personal and this practical guidance on how you can make these types of healthy, practical changes in their life.
Love it. So I'm on Instagram at prosper_NC. So Prosper Nutrition Coaching. I actually have a certification for health coaches and anyone that's into nutrition and wellness where you can get certified as a nutrition coach. But if you really love metaphors and activities and gamification, I actually have a completely free masterclass on the topic of nutrition coaching. If you go to prospernutritioncoaching.com/liftoff, you can totally sign up and go through that masterclass. And there are a ton of fun resources and games for regular folks that want to eat better, as well as health and fitness coaches who want to apply it to the clients that they're working with. So that's completely free for you guys.
Awesome. I will put all of those links in the episode notes as well. So you guys will be able to go there to find those resources and get the links that she just mentioned. So Jen,
awesome.
Thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and I really appreciate the time, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Platform Podcast. We'll be back with a new episode soon. Please be sure to leave a rating and review of the Platform Podcast in your app of choice. Support our work by supporting our affiliates. And of course, if you have questions or you want help reaching your goals, reach out to me. Until next time, thanks for listening.